You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Ben Roethlisberger came back last night after missing most of last season with that elbow injury, and he looked pretty good. Three touchdown passes. Pittsburgh picked up the win over the Giants, 26-16. Just two seasons ago, Ben led the NFL in passing. He's got the arm strength. I don't know about his weapons. He's not mobile, so we don't have to worry about him slowing down. There's no Antonio Brown, no Le'Veon Bell. This rookie out of Notre Dame, Chase Claypool, looked pretty good last night. And you start to look at the expectations for Tom Brady, Drew Brees. They're pretty high. Super Bowl or bust. Ben doesn't have that. They're not even the best team in their own division. I don't know what to expect out of them. I did find them the most fascinating team going into this season, believe it or not, because of Ben. I don't know what to expect out of him, but if he does play well, that defense is elite, and it could be a surprise playoff appearance, and maybe they could be dangerous come January. Pittsburgh is an interesting team, and if Ben plays like the old Ben Roethlisberger, then they're going to be a interesting team to watch the entire season. As for the Giants, they're the losingest team over the last 3 years. I don't know if they're any closer to being a good team, average team. Daniel Jones shows signs. Saquon Barkley, I feel for him because that offensive line is not very good. And it almost reminded me of Barry Sanders. When Barry Sanders got to the Detroit Lions, Barry would always get stopped for -2, -3, and then he would break one for 67 yards. That's probably what you're going to get with Saquon Barkley. But the Giants at home, and they left some points out there on the field. They could have made this a far more interesting game. But that Pittsburgh defense is real. It'd help if you blocked Bud Dupree. That was, and some of his friends, but, you know, just block a couple of guys there. But Pittsburgh, I love watching that defense. And, skill position players. Feels like Pittsburgh always finds a wide receiver, too. But last night, picking up the win. And then in the nightcap, it was a typical Titans victory, 16-14. It almost feels like every game, first team to 21 wins with Tennessee. 16-14, the final last night, and it was not pretty. Steven Guskowski became the first kicker to miss four kicks, if you include point after and field goals, in his first game with the team since 1968. He's also the first kicker to miss four kicks in a game, yet make the game-winning field goal. Last time that happened, December of 1991, Buffalo's Scott Norwood did the honors.
Stat of the day, stat of the day, stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes that what? Stat of the day.
Denver's got some promise there. Drew Locke, I know that he shows some glimpses there. Jerry Jeudy looks good. You got some running backs there. But you're still looking at this Denver team where I'm not sure if, and maybe they are a playoff team, but, you know, without Von Miller in there, these are games that you should win. If you're a playoff team, you should win these games. At home, you should win those games. And you had your opportunities there. Vic Fangio, he had timeouts, didn't use the timeouts late in the game, and he explained it after the game.
Well, it was twofold there. One, their field goal kicker had obviously been having his problems, so I didn't want to extend the drive to where they could get closer, number one. And number two, you know, we would have used the timeout, but we got the running back out of bounds. We would have used the second timeout, but they threw an incompletion, you know, which would have given us one left when we got the ball back.
Okay. I at least used the timeout to freeze the kicker. You don't get to carry him over to week two, so why don't you use them? And could have used them earlier, didn't, but it is week one, trying to figure all of this out. And, the fact that you don't have preseason and very little in-person practices, I get it. We're going to have, and we did have some sluggish football there. But this is the kind of game that Tennessee loves. Keep it close. And, yeah, you don't want it to come down to a kicker who has missed three previous kicks. But here's Mike Vrabel, the Titans head coach.
Nope. And they did, obviously, because they weren't using their timeouts. So they were banking on them. And, we all got to do our job. And again, it's not on just one player. You know, we'll get this stuff fixed. We got a lot of faith in our players. Excited to get out of here with a win. It's a tough place to play.
That's Coach Vrabel asking if he had any doubts on the game-winning field goal. I wonder if Steven Guskowski would be employed if he missed that kick. Because I saw the Cleveland Browns, they fired their kicker after week one. You know, everything that happened with Cleveland, you know, we're going to fix this thing. We're going to fire our kicker. Does that send a message into the locker room? Hey, nobody's safe in here. We just fired our kicker. Because three more points would have really helped us going into this game on Thursday night. And this Thursday night game, the Browns and Bengals, I find fascinating. I know you don't want to use must win, but for Cleveland's sake, they better win this game. Because if you don't have an impressive performance and then all of a sudden more doubt creeps in, if Baker Mayfield doesn't have a good game, now there's enough talent on that team that they should be able to overcome some shortcomings with Baker Mayfield. And you got Joe Burrow. You know, Cincinnati is going to be playing with house money. It's like nobody expects us to do anything. And the fact that they almost pulled off a win against a pretty good L.A. Charger defense, an impressive debut by him. But this game on Thursday night is really, really spicy, in my opinion. Ben Roethlisberger said he felt great out there. This is what he had to say after last night's win.
I probably just grabbed my knee because I was moving so fast. But no, I feel great right now. Obviously, adrenaline is still probably pumping, and we won the game. I'm going to be sore tomorrow. There's no doubt. I got some bumps and bruises, but in terms of elbow and everything else, I feel really good right now.
All right. So Steelers over the Giants, Titans over the Broncos. Padres have won 8 in a row, by the way, and creeping up on my Dodgers here. And when you talk about scoring runs, it's the Dodgers and the Padres right now. How many games are left in the regular season, McLevin? Are we close to like 10 games left?
Yeah, like a dozen.
Yeah, something like that. I'm looking forward to the playoffs. I haven't really followed the regular season. Like, it just periodically I'll find a game, watch a game, but I'm waiting for the postseason. Yes, McLevin?
No, this doesn't count. None of it counts.
It does count.
It doesn't matter.
Technically, it counts.
The Phillies have fallen out of playoffs.
Technically, the Phillies were in the playoffs.
I was all in a week ago, and then the teams like the Marlins and the Orioles and the Blue Jays, all these teams with a bunch of 22-year-olds are rolling right now.
The Phillies are still in the playoff chase.
They're in the chase, but they fell below 500, okay. And they have like a $300 million payroll.
Oh, I know. And part of that is, you know, your guy Bryce Harper.
He's been great. It's just the bullpen's bad. But the Yankees aren't good. Like, the whole season is so wonky.
The Yankees have injuries. I mean, Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton can't stay healthy. Gary Sanchez can't play. And their pitching staff is just okay. Other than that, everything's great.
Yes. It's just so weird, though, the whole thing.
Yes, Pony.
I looked at the baseball standings. According to the percentages, 19 teams are still alive for the 16 playoff spots. We're midway through September, and there's 19 teams alive for the postseason. Mm. It used to be at this time of year, before wild card, there's 6 teams alive, tops.
Yeah, expanding the playoffs and the fact that it's a 60-game sprint. How many teams are not going to play 60 games? That's what I'm curious about. Is everybody going to get in every game before they start the postseason? Because I think it's only fair to the teams who have been able to play all of their games, because I want your pitching staff taxed, because, you know, we're pitching 60 games. You should be following everybody else and playing 60 games. I don't know if you can get all those. They're going to have a triple header one of these days in baseball, like 5-inning games. Yeah, Paul.
The Cardinals have played, I think, the fewest. They played 42 games. They're about five or six games behind the average team right now.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Steve Levy, Mr. Monday Night. He had the call last night in Denver with the Broncos and the Titans. Made his debut as the main play-by-play voice with Brian Griese and Louis Riddick. He'll be on the call for Drew Brees and the Saints at the Las Vegas Raiders next Monday night. So how did it feel, Leaves?
Oh, that was a classic game, Dan. They're going to be replaying that game for years to come. That was that 7-7 wildfire. It was, yeah, it was, that was something, man. It was fun. It was fun in the booth. We had a good time. I think it was a good jumping off point for us. You know, we'll be much better next week and hope to be much better every single week. But it felt great to finally get it going. You know, there's been so much talk about, you know, the Monday Night Football booth, really. And it was just good to call some football.
Did you read Twitter at all?
I have not. You know, I can't get through text messages. So I'll tell you what, it does make you feel pretty good about yourself, Dan. It makes you feel like, you know, maybe I'm a decent human being. I can't tell you how many people, and yourself included, have reached out with kind tweets, kind texts throughout some tweets, but mostly texts throughout the process, you know, leading up to getting the gig and then, wishing good luck and relax and have a good time and all those kind of important reminders. But it's really been great for my friends and my family, and it's really appreciated.
But has it set in? I mean, you're calling Monday Night Football.
So that's a great question. So not really. Like, last night what I did 1 year ago. We had that same back end of the doubleheader, the opening night weekend. It was the Broncos again. So not really. You know, there wasn't a massive pregame show and the massive hype. We knew we were on late, so we'd lose some part of the country and like that. So I think it really kicks in this coming Monday night. We'll have the stage to ourselves, and we'll be on at the normal time. There'll be the full pregame. It's also the actual 50th anniversary of the first ever Monday Night Football game. And then I think, you know, listen, quite frankly, we want to ramp up here, Dan. We want to be at our best for week three. We know we'll have a few eyeballs on that one. And I think, you know, honestly, that's probably the best regular season game on the schedule. Certainly on paper, you know, things can change throughout the season. But before the season starts, if you could only watch one NFL game, I'm guessing a lot of people would pick Kansas City at Baltimore, and we're fortunate to have that on the schedule.
How nervous were you?
Yeah, again, not really. And I think that's part of being overprepared. You know, people talk about that. If you're properly prepared, you shouldn't be nervous. And, again, having the experience of doing the game a year ago really went a long way towards that. I can't tell you, and you get this, but I hope everybody does, we have so much help, Dan. We get so much help from so many different people. From the people who are working in the booth, they were drilling like it was a Home Depot store last night, trying to make adjustments in the booth. So it's our first time with the crew, and Greasy wants his telestrator here, and Riddick needs this over there, and I need a shelf. You know, and it's too cold for Riddick. It's too hot for me in the booth, you know. I'm just saying, there's so many people running around. And that's even when it's pared down because of the pandemic, we're probably traveling half the people. And then the influx of emails, I've never seen anything like it, the amount of information. But, again, it's just people trying to be helpful. And it's not just ESPN information people. It's the NFL. It's the two clubs. Their public relations people, everybody just trying to be so helpful, give you everything you need to put the best product on the air. So it's been a lot of fun, man.
What about no fans in the stands?
So, you know, I found at one point I said, listen to the crowd, you know, that's not here, you know. And in the headset, the mix we're getting, I think, is very different than what is being played in the stadium. And if you get lost in the moment, and I hope this is the case at home, but if you get lost in the moment like I was broadcasting the game, you hear the crowd roar, and they seem to roar at the right time. And I'll go back and watch the tape and see how it sounded on television. But I'm looking forward to crowds. You know, sort of building the head. Lisa Salters had a funny report. They had 500 people in the stadium last night, and we were really told it was kind of a test of the protocols. Sort of a dry run. They're going to have 5,700 in Denver for their next home game in a couple of weeks when Brady and the Bucks come to town. But, so in essence, they're testing it out on the friends and the family of the players and the employees of the team. But concession stands were open and those kinds of things. Couldn't really hear that crowd, but the crowd, the enhanced audio that was piped in, certainly in my headset, made it sound good, and I think you could get lost in the moment, which was nice.
He's Steve Levy. He's Mr. Monday Night. Now, you're no longer SportsCenter anchor, right?
Yeah, I'm still not used to it. My Twitter bio is going to stay as the unofficial voice of the Bahamas Bowl, I think.
but you don't do SportsCenter anymore?
Not during the NFL season, I would think so. you know, I'll see you January 7th, Dan. I know you're missing me on the 11 o'clock show.
I'll come back and do a Sports Center with you, Lee.
It's late, Dan. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, we go after Van Pelt, and it's, you know, and it's 12:30 or something. There's a Mariners game that goes a little later. We all stick around for extra innings.
Oh, that used to drive me crazy when you go, okay, just close this out. Come on in. You know, let's go. Right. And then somebody would give up a 3-run jack, and you go, oh, God. And it goes 16 innings.
I remember back in the day, we'd like, let's just put our voice down on a track and say, and that led to the final score, you know? And, of course, not thinking for the poor people who have to stay behind and put the video to the audio and all that.
Sunday night, and Mike Keenan got fired, I think, in St. Right. Louis. Does that sound right? And
well, he got fired a lot of places.
He did. But Keith Overman had already gone home. And so I was there, and then I was getting ready to leave, and all of a sudden it came over the wire. Hey, Mike Keenan just got fired. We had to redo like the first block of SportsCenter. And right. The joke was that we sent Judd Birch to Oberman's house and that Keith was in the hot tub, which wasn't true, but we created this story that you got to go get Overman and bring him back. And then we had to go and redo the first 15 minutes of SportsCenter that night. The great memories
damn shame that we didn't have Zoom back then, because then you could have had Keith in the hot tub doing that first time we're here.
Are you following the Stanley Cup final here?
You know, a little bit. Very, very surprised about the Dallas Stars. I mean, did not see that coming. Good for them. And, you know, I kind of feel bad for whoever. You know, whether it looks like Tampa is, you know, the class, I think, of the teams remaining. But, you know, whoever's going to win the Stanley Cup is, you know, there's no asterisk or anything as far as that's concerned. But I feel for the players, the organization, their fans, that they won't have that traditional celebration. And I'm sure whenever there are fans allowed back in the building, you know, they'll reenact it and they'll have the guys come out skating around with the Stanley Cup, but it won't be the same thing. But the NHL's done a great job in the television product, like I said. You know, the NBA too, by the way, and WNBA, like, you can get lost in the game. If you're sitting at home, I find, if you're interested in the game, you can get lost in it, and you don't then realize, hey, there are no fans there, and the enhanced crowd and all that. So I really think, you know, all the TV folks have done a really good job bringing that product home as best they can under extraordinary circumstances, really.
Tougher doing an NFL game or a hockey game?
That's a good question. You know, it's funny. I think there's so much more that goes into the NFL game. There's so many, you know, in terms of the cameras, the amount of people in the headset, and certainly the amount of the eyeballs that are watching and the viewers. I thought you were going to ask me tougher college or pro, and I mean, there's no question to me the NFL is an easier game to broadcast by virtue of there's just half the players. I mean, start right there. And it's, you know, college plays like an extra quarter. The game's like an extra 40 minutes. That NFL game flew pretty quick. We had a really fast first half, and you do look up and you see, hey, there's a minute left in the first quarter. The NFL is packaged so well for television, you know, to try to fit in that 3-hour window. So I would say hockey's a little easier for me, but the pressure's kind of off, you know. There's no spotter. You're not relying on anyone else in hockey because there's no time to look down and get help. You're sort of on your own that way, and the game just flies. And it seemed to be, you know, hockey's a little more under the radar. The whole world's not watching. It's really, you know, hockey fans, I think. And as passionate as they are, they're a good bunch too, maybe a little less critical.
I almost texted you last night when you said Steven Gostkowski, a future Hall of Famer.
All right, let's talk about that. You think that's off base, or is that he was a Hall of Famer before last night?
He's Hall of Very Good.
Oh, Dan. I think, you know, a lot of this is statistically based.
Yeah.
And he's got every number. I think he's a Hall of Fame kicker. How many kickers do we have in the Hall of Fame, by the way? Jan Stenerud.
Vinatieri's going in. Morten Andersen's in.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Yep.
Ray Guy is a punter, but it's really tough to get in.
No, you're right. You're right, but if anybody, you know, Gostkowski's numbers are off the charts. You know, he has more points. I think his accuracy level might be more than Vinatieri. Again, his career percentage went way down last night.
I know it did.
That's hard to do.
You know what? Goskowski's going to have you induct him, I think, if he makes it into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I should do this. You're right again. And there's the game-winning kick. He wins another football game.
Yeah,
we'll leave out the four misses. So that's a rough night. And, we harped on it a little bit. But, the Titans kicked, I think, 8 field goals all of last season. 8 field goals the entire season and still made it to the conference championship game. They were a half away from the Super Bowl, so... they got to figure that out. Mike Vrabel should have never been in that spot last night. 47 in the NFL in altitude is a chippy, and that was his longest kick last night. So that game shouldn't have been close. That was 10 points, off the board for Tennessee that should have been there. So I think they were fortunate to escape with that. Yep.
Post-game beers last night?
Two Bud Lights. That's my thing. Two Bud Lights.
That was it.
Got to be cold.
By yourself?
Some of the fellas socially distanced, of course, drinking through the mask. Yes. Which is not an easy trick. You take the loop off your ear, take a sip, put the loop back on your ear. Very enjoyable day.
Oh, you don't get cheated, do you? Hey, safe travels. And, we'll be watching next week. And, I knew it was your first game and I didn't want to text you anything. I just thought, but when you said that, I was just going to go HOF question mark, but I thought, nah, I didn't want confusion, and I would have been unprofessional in doing something like that.
No, you can't be a professional. I'll take your text anytime, brother.
All right, buddy. Safe travels. Thank you, Leaves.
All right.
That's Steve Levy, Mr. Monday Night.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Washington football team had the win against the Philadelphia Eagles. Didn't look good in the first half, but came back, scored 27 unanswered points, beating the Eagles 27-7. Their head coach, Ron Rivera, kind enough to join us. Coach, how's it feel to be in first place?
It feels good. It does, Dan. It's been a long offseason. It really has, but I was just real happy for our players. They were very resilient, did the things that they needed to do, and took care of business. So it's exciting. It is.
How's your health? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It's been a little trying, just trying to kind of get in the swing of things, get the feel for it, understand what's happening, what's happening with me, what's happening with my health, what's happening with my body. But I'm very fortunate. I got a great team of doctors and specialists, and I got a good prognosis. So, again, it's a matter of taking care of business now.
Now, when you got an IV at halftime, is that planned?
Yes, it was planned. It was more about hydration, making sure that I was going to be okay in terms of my energy level and all that. It was a warm day, and talking with our team doctor and our head trainer, we had mapped it out. As soon as we were coming in, I was going straight into the training room, and I was going to take care of my business and let it go from there.
Now, it's cell cancer?
Well, what it is, it's a squamous form of cancer that's gotten into one of my lymph nodes. And it's not lymphoma. Some people have misreported it, but it's a form of cancer that got into a lymph node. It's a very treatable, very curable type cancer. So I'm very fortunate we caught it early.
And what happened at halftime? You're getting an IV, and then all of a sudden you have to overhear a voice that's standing out among all of the voices there in the locker room. What was going on?
Well, what happened was I was going in. I talked to Malcolm Black, my director of player development. I said, hey, we got to make sure we have somebody step up to the mic, and give the halftime speeches. I don't think I'll be done in time. So I go in, I'm getting the IV, and all of a sudden, I hear the 2-minute warning, and then all of a sudden I hear this high-pitched voice, at the top of his lungs screaming at everybody, come on, bring it up, Scott, bring it in tight. And they start talking about what happened last year. Last year, the Washington team had the lead and gave it up and lost. Well, that's pretty much what Dwayne Haskins did, was he talked about what happened last year and said, hey, why can't it happen for us this year? And it was a very good speech from what I hear. I didn't hear it all. I heard bits and pieces, but from what I was told, the guys went out and obviously based on the way they played, he hit a chord with them.
What have you seen that's different about Dwayne Haskins this year as opposed to last year?
First of all, his detail and his work. Getting an opportunity to watch some of the practice tape from last year and watching some of the games that he played. And then the conversations he and I had in January, where I basically challenged him about, you know, developing and changing and learning how to do things the right way. He took it to heart. You know, he had a really good offseason all the way through all the Zoom meetings that we had, the way he kind of led his teammates through some of their own personal workouts that they had together as groups, to the way he handled himself during training camp. It's been tremendous. It really has. You've seen a transformation of a young man that's trying to learn how to focus and learn how to do it the right way.
What do you think of your defense?
I like the beginning. I really do. You know, I basically told the team, you know, halfway through the second quarters. I'm not sure who showed up in the first quarter wearing burgundy, guys, but guys that are playing right now, those are the guys that I like. And they got the message. It was a hell of a deal that, you know, the way they just really kind of put it together, you know, because we really have anything to gauge it on, Dan. You know, we had no preseason games. You know, we did most of our hitting was early because of the way practices were set up. And then from that point, it was really about, you know, installations and learning. So we didn't know what we had. And I thought we played tentatively. I mean, if you look at what happened on special teams, you know, we didn't play well early. We missed a kick. Defense, we gave up 17 points quickly. Defense, offensively, we went a couple of three and outs right away. So we really didn't put it together. All of a sudden, we get a takeaway. Fabian Moreau intercepts the ball. We go down and score a touchdown. We pinned them inside, you know, inside the 10 a couple times, and then we were off to the races. So it was almost like all of a sudden the realization that, man, you know what? We have a chance. We can be pretty good.
You got Arizona coming up and Kyler Murray. Have you looked at the game film from their game against the Niners?
Yes, I did. I mean, he's a dynamic young man. We played him last year. You know, I think it was our third game of the year last year in Carolina. I had an opportunity to watch him. We won, but you could see what the young man means to their offense. You know, and then you throw Hop on top of it. You know, and now he has another weapon. I mean, they're a very well rounded offense. Good offensive line, stout, good running backs. I love their backs. You know, I like Drake a lot. And then you look at their defense and you think that they've done a good job putting a team together down in Arizona.
Did you catch any of Cam Newton's highlights?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
He's, you know what? It's only going to get better. It really is. He hadn't played a lot of football the last 2 years. And I followed him, you know, during the offseason just to see where he was, keep tabs on him just in case something happened here. But he ended up in a good place, and really just kind of watching him and watch the way he played, he was having fun. And that's probably the biggest thing that he probably hadn't had in the last 2 years because of the injuries, is he hadn't had any fun. So, you know, I'll tell you what, I just think he's going to get better and better and stronger and stronger.
What'd you think of the yellow outfit that he wore to the game? Did you see that? Do you have a favorite Cam outfit?
You know, anyone that he wears a hat. I think the one where he dressed up like Hugh Hefner with the robe that one time. I thought that was one of my favorites. But, you know, I texted Derek Anderson before the game, and I said, hey, do you know what your guy's wearing? And he texted me back. He said, no, I'm going to have to get a picture. And then when he finally saw the picture, he sent it to me, and, oh, we started chuckling.
But he wore the scarf that one time.
Yes.
Like, whatever that was, I don't – like, did you ever say anything to him like, Cam, you know, maybe not – after this game?
Well, you know what happened was in 2013 when we started rolling, I had this little motto about guys, hey, man, you know, hey, make sure you do things the right way. Okay. If you live your life by these sets of rules, do it, but keep your personality. So he took it to the extreme. He kept his personality. And so every time I would say something, he said, coach, you told me to be myself, keep my personality. You know, because that's one thing Cam will do is he'll use your words against you now.
I loved it. Did Belichick reach out to you to ask you about Cam before he signed him?
No. You know, Coach and I, you know, we have a great relationship. We talk every now and then. But no, he didn't. But again, that's one of the places when people ask me, where do I think he'd end up? I said, I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up in New England because of the way Coach – and he said it the other day. You find out what your guy does best and you do it. And that's what he did with Tom Brady for all those years. And that's what he's going to do with Cam. I mean, he's going to do the things that Cam does best.
What's your T-shirt signify?
Oh, this is my hometown area, Monterey, California, and that's the logo for the Monterey Peninsula Country Club.
Do you play Pebble? Obviously.
Yes, I grew up there, and I've had a couple chances. Yes.
All right. Are you any good?
I'm good enough to get beat. I get beat by my wife. She's my wife's a 5 handicap. Okay, so and she didn't give me strokes.
Do your players have any idea the kind of player you were? Does anybody bring up old footage or pictures?
A few of them do, especially Thomas Davis. He never lets me forget it. You know, he knew I was kind of the dirty work guy. You know, I wasn't spectacular. I wasn't one of those, you know, great players. I was just that guy that knew my role. I did my role. I played it to the best of my ability. I think that's that. And Thomas lets me know that all the time.
All you need to do is bring out that Super Bowl ring from 85.
That's what I do.
Like that.
Believe me, I haven't done it yet. I'm going to do it. But yeah, you're right. That carries a lot of weight. It really does, especially with the players. And that's one of the things that, you know, we're trying to get across to these guys, that we've got a lot of people that have been there. They know what it takes. So you got to trust us.
And did you keep anything from that Super Bowl?
From Super Bowl 20?
With the Bears.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I got pictures. You know what I found? Well, you know, when you pack up and you move and you know you have it somewhere, I found Buddy Ryan's game notes for us for Super Bowl 20, and the game plan. So I have all that. Stephanie put a nice little file. We sealed it up and put it away. I mean, I went back and looked at that, and there's some really cool stuff that Coach Ryan had on that. I mean, that was an amazing to find. It really was. It was cool to see again.
But you had both the defensive coordinator and the head coach got carried off the field. Was it really split like that? That the defense was with Buddy and the everybody else was with Ditka?
Yeah, you know what? Buddy had this way of really painting us against the world. He really did, and that was the thing. That's why the guys love Buddy on defensive side so much, because you know we were his guys, and this is something I believe that Buddy had learned from when he was in Korea, when he was a sergeant. You know, and he told me a couple stories about, you know, having to lead men, and some of the things that Buddy and I had a chance to talk about was really cool. And just to know who he was, that it was about making sure that us as a group, as a defensive unit, were tight. That's what he did. I mean, he really knew how to make a group of guys come together. And we really did. And believe me, a lot of the things that I do today, who I am as a coach, I owe to Coach Dickett, but I also owe to Buddy Ryan.
Great stuff. It's great to talk to you. And congrats on the win. And good luck trying to corral Kyler Murray. That'll keep you up at night there, Coach.
Yes, it does. It does. In fact, we you know, the defense is still meeting right now, and I was actually talking to a few of those guys earlier about a couple ideas. So we'll see what happens. And he's a heck of a football player, though, and we got our work cut out for us.
Thank you, Coach. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
That's Ron Rivera, Washington football team head coach. I like the unis. I like the helmets. I like the numbers on the side there. And Daniel Snyder talked about maybe they just keep that as the nickname. I'm not sure. But they got Arizona in Arizona coming up next weekend. It always helps when you win. Your uniforms look a whole lot better when you win. I remember the old Padre uniforms in the 70s, and they weren't good looking at all. But then the Padres weren't very good. When the Astros had that rainbow, whatever it was, they looked a whole lot better when they started winning. Nolan Ryan helped that as well. But I think we've talked about this before. A team that wins who has bad uniforms, or a team that doesn't win that has good uniforms. Because people would say, when the Bengals were winning, then they liked the Tiger Stripes. But when they weren't winning, then they didn't like them. I don't know if there's another team that you think of that they didn't win, but we like their uniforms. Because usually they go hand in hand. Or you give the team the benefit of the doubt where you go, you know, those uniforms look okay. Yeah, Paul.
And if you go back when the Chargers kind of blew up again in the early 80s, they had Dan Fouts and Joyner and those guys, and those uniforms came back in vogue. They always kept the lightning bolt, which was kind of their calling card.
That's still, it's a wonderful looking uniform. It's just something about it whenever you saw, and that's, it might have been the first football game I saw in person. Was the Chargers against the Bengals in Cincinnati. And that's when John Hadle was the quarterback. Lance Allworth, Gary Garrison, Dickie Post. And I just remember when they came out on the field. And the Bengals uniforms back then were so bland. So bland. And watching those Chargers, they came out on the field. And I loved AFL football because they threw it. Wide open, had fun. And the Chargers came out. And that image never left me of, boy, that is a gorgeous-looking uniform. Yeah, Paul.
The other day, I sit with my daughter, Molly. She's 9. And I asked her, just from looks, which is your favorite uniform? I went through all the teams. We had pictures. Guess which team she picked? A 9-year-old. Favorite uniforms. She did like the Chargers a lot, but that was not her overall favorite.
The Cleveland Browns.
The Detroit Lions. She loved the blue. She thought it was fun and loud, and she loved the Detroit Lions.
Well, that's maybe their target audience. They're looking for nine-year-olds that will have no idea what the Lions have done the previous, you know, six decades.
She thinks they're pretty good for the first three quarters.
Yeah, they're not good in the fourth quarter holding leads. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.